Hi, my name is Ben Griffin. Today I'm going to talk to you about architecting cloud-native apps with AKS and Cosmos DB. I'm an Azure Technical Specialist focusing on NoSQL. And if you want to hit me up after this presentation, please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter on Benito Griffin. So just for some of the agenda items today, I want to cover around cloud-native app development with Kubernetes and some of the advantages there. I want to talk about running databases in containers and some considerations, and then how Cosmos DB and Kubernetes, in this case, AKS being the Azure Kubernetes Service, work well together. So let's step back and sort of say, what is cloud native? So this definition has come from the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So we're talking about scaling applications that work across environments such as public, private, and hybrid clouds. We're talking about loosely coupled systems that are resilient, manageable, and observable. We're talking about comprised of containers, service meshes, microservices, immutable infrastructure, and declarative APIs. I do have a link down the bottom there which talks about Microsoft's definition of cloud native and how we approach that subject, which will be available to you later. We talk about cloud native applications. So what's important there? So there's a couple of problem statements we probably need to look at. One is from the architects and developer. You know, what are we trying to build? They're trying to build rapid, secure, high available, high performance applications. And we're thinking of a code first mentality. And then we've also got the service operators or operations that are trying to efficiently deploy and manage and operate a cost-effective infrastructure. And generally, these service operators aren't necessarily your traditional relational DBAs. If we just sort of plug in around cloud native on Azure, so we've got a lot of best practices and from our enterprise engagements of over 1,000 or more that highlight how we tackle, you know, cloud native development. We're also one of the largest security companies in the world, and we also have about 3,500 security experts focused on data security and your privacy. And this is all backed by 24/7, 365 day back support. So, and this is by, you know, Kubernetes qualified experts, but also from Cosmos DB as well. So let's just talk about Kubernetes. Now, I'm not going to sort of go into, you know, what is Kubernetes exactly. I expect everyone to have some understanding of what it is. But at the end of the day, Kubernetes has revolutionized the application or cloud native development landscape. Kubernetes allows us to have automatic provisioning and upgrading of our applications. It allows us to have high availability, allows us to have easy and secure cluster scaling, self-healing, we're allowed to have API monitoring, and all of this is sort of at no charge for you when you're using a managed service, providing that you do it without you doing it yourself. If we look at our managed control plane, we offer all this to you, but you don't have to worry about managing all of it. You get all the advantages and hooks into Azure, and you don't have to worry about doing any of the heavy lifting yourself. As you can see here, you've still got access to your Docker containers and your pods to be able to run your applications, your micro applications in this instance. So Azure Kubernetes Service basically simplifies your management and operations of Kubernetes. We'll enable you to deploy and manage Kubernetes with ease. So the click of a button, you can fire up a Kubernetes cluster a lot easier than doing Kubernetes the hard way. We're able to scale and run your applications with confidence very easily through a microservices architecture and a container-based approach. You're able to secure your environment so we can hook into RBAC controls and all the other governance controls that Microsoft has to offer. We offer accelerated containerized application development, so you can do that iteration loop through, you know, build, test, and deploy your application. And we can also support multiple different open APIs as well. And then you've also got hooking into your CI/CD workflow as well in just a few clicks. So if we look at the elements of orchestration, so we're able to be able to schedule our application to run, and Kubernetes takes care of how that's going to run that application for you or your microservice. You're able to deploy your containers into different, deploy your pods into different nodes. So therefore you can say, I want this container being run next to this container, or I want this container run on this particular node and this one to run another particular node. We've got a health monitoring to ensure that, you know, if the pod's been compromised or if there's not running well, it will terminate it and redeploy it for you. Failover, if a pod dies, then another one will spin up in its place. We've got other elements such as scaling, networking. So be able to scale out your pods in comparison to demand. We've got networking, ease of networking between those pods that we look after for you. Service discovery, so you don't have to worry about all the DNS pods. Pods know how to talk to each other. And you can coordinate your upgrades, finally. So this is just a very sort of diagram, a very sort of basic diagram of the typical sort of architecture that we see. We have an Azure Firewall, we have Azure Gateway, we have a load balancer hooking into a Kubernetes service with your pods. And then you've got your surrounding services to that, like Azure Monitor or Active Directory or Container Registry. And then you've got, you know, your dev loop down the bottom there going into GitHubs and CI/CD. Now, if we look at a typical sort of application, we have, you know, the presentation layer, we've got some business logic. So in this instance, we're saying we've got a customer, a product, and an order, and we've got a data access layer. So we have our clients, gateway, you know, we're talking, we've got a service instance, and then we're all hooking back to a database at the end of the day. Now, when we start looking at doing containerization, what we're saying is we're going to create each one of these service instances or each microservice and be able to scale them accordingly, but they're going to go and talk back to it like a database container. And this is what typically people start doing. But when you start going down that pathway of putting a database in a container, you've got to worry about how do we upgrade our application. So not only do you have to upgrade your application, which Kubernetes can handle for you by redeploying that microservice, you've also got to worry about how do I update my database schema and things like that as well, and also be able to, you know, scale my database accordingly to handle demand. And this can be quite complex. So if we sort of look at a NoSQL database, you know, such as Cosmos DB, for example, basically, we are removing this idea of when a pod fails or a node fails, we can then replicate this container for us to work. Now, we do hit an issue when we go down this pathway sometimes where we don't have enough resourcing in the database container to handle demand. And this is where we need to look at creating replica sets. So what we'll do there is we'll create a replica set for our database, and we'll create a number of different copies of our database going back to a data source, of course, to be able to handle demand. Now, what happens is when we scale our application again, we start getting this issue where we're not going to be able to handle that demand, where we're going to have to, the database is going to have to create more containers in more shards to be able to handle that demand, and that takes time. And so this is where we need to shard our database to do this. Now, once we shard it, then we can scale up our containers and our applications, our microservices, and then we can also scale up our containers accordingly as well with those different shards. But this comes at a cost, so we're not 100% solved our problem yet. When we start looking at scaling up our database, generally speaking, we're going to increase those shards because we need to distribute that data across those different containers. And there's a time equation cost that you've got to worry about here. So you've got the CPU utilization over X time and the memory utilization over X time. And you'll get this point where you get constrained capacity while the shards are being created. And the same thing when we have to scale down as well. We've got to ensure that our load balancer is running, determine the name of the shards and remove the chunks, check the status. And this takes time to scale down. So then what we have is our application over time will scale up in theory, and then application will scale down over time as well. And in practice, we see a bit like this sort of wave graph down the bottom here where things are up and down. And this is where, you know, your PaaS database services come into play. Now, what we've all been talking mostly around high availability, we're talking about scaling up and down on the fly with our database containers, and we're talking about replication. So those are sort of the main things there from what I was just talking about that we get the advantage out of Kubernetes that match the advantage of a database PaaS service. Not to mention that we have security, backup and restore, etc. as well. Oops. So if we think about Cosmos DB is a fully managed NoSQL database for modern app development with SLA-backed speed and availability and automatically and instant scalability for open source APIs such as Mongo, Cassandra, and other NoSQL engines. So we provide you with a guaranteed speed at any scale with an SLA-backed throughput. and also global access and replication. We provide you with simple application development. We've got a myriad of different open source APIs, as I mentioned, Mongo, Cassandra, and other NoSQL engines, but we also have SDKs that you can hook into as well to make that application development easy. We're mission critical ready. We're able to provide you with 5 nines of availability, and we're able to provide you enterprise level security for your application as well, through integration through things like RBAC and other governance controls. And you've got full end-to-end management of your database as well. So we can ensure that you have, you know, serverless capabilities, so you're only paying for what you use. You've got automatic scaling, so you don't have to worry about manually creating these sharded database for you. So you can get this full end-to-end total cost of ownership model of what you want to do. And so these are some of the, you know, reasons why people sort of look at Cosmos DB, and this isn't also conclusive, but generally speaking, you want a flexible schema. This is an advantage of a NoSQL database, not just Cosmos. You know, so if you had IoT data, your sensor data might change over time. You got scalability, so you want to have, you know, high amount of writes per second. So Cosmos DB guarantees throughput for any workload. So we've got low latency, so very fast. We're under 10 milliseconds at the P99 for reads and writes of 1 kilobyte documents. And this is where it's very useful if people start using Cosmos for like a caching sort of type of layer. And then a high availability. So we can offer you 5 nines HI availability if you're looking at sort of 2 regions. We also have, you know, multi-master writes as well. So if I sort of dissect what we've just talked about in terms of what the advantage of a NoSQL database is, or a PaaS service such as Cosmos DB, it is ideal for cloud native because it can infinitely and instantly scale. So matching your different billing model. And what I mean there is AKS or Kubernetes can scale all its pods and replica sets according to demand. So Cosmos DB can do exactly the same thing. It can scale to handle the demand very quickly for you. We've got the flexible schema, which makes sense. So with your cloud native development, you're going to make an addition to your microservice. You don't have to worry about if doing a schema update. You can just send that update with your microservice and the database will handle it. We've got support for atomic transactions. You've got something called the Cosmos DB change feed, which allows us to do, you know, event-driven architectures. We've got something called the analytical store, which allows us to do analytical reporting against your operational data, removing the ETL tax that you have to manipulate that data into a format that you can do easy report on. We've got the serverless capability, so you only pay for what you're using with Cosmos DB. And obviously, as I just previously mentioned, we've got high availability, and Cosmos is available in, you know, almost 90% of all the Azure regions. And so therefore you can distribute your data globally very easily and very quickly. So this is just this sign graph I was showing you earlier, just showing about how things scale up. So this is just like in a normal constrained sort of manner where we're scaling, we hit a roadblock, we need to create some shards, we've got a delay, and we hit constrained capacity until we can get more of that throughput coming through. And then once you get up there, you've got that whole line going across. However, when you're doing that, you're looking at, you know, your capacity and costs will increase whilst you're waiting for that delay for your database to be able to perform to what you require. So you've also got the scale down delay as well. So this is sort of what happens in a traditional sort of NoSQL sense. And when you're doing this, you're looking at, you've sort of got this over-provisioned throughput that you're using, that you're not utilizing. So when we're looking at limitations here, we've got scale limits, we've got constrained capacity, and we're over-provisioned. Now, before I just jump into the next part, I just want to quickly show that Cosmos DB has like a billing model where we're looking at, you know, storage, so SSD, 25 cents per month. We're talking about provision throughput, and we have this concept around RUs, which I'll talk about in a moment. So these RUs is basically a wrapped up value that adds up memory, CPU, and IOPS. So you just say that my application might need 400 RUs, and there's a way of calculating how much your application might require. And that's how Cosmos DB works. You just justify how many RUs your application will require, and it will go through and scale accordingly and make sure that those RUs are available to you. And this sort of gives you the idea of, you know, one IU document will allow you to get that read of one IU. You have five IUs for a write for a 1K document, and queries depend, obviously. So if I just jump back to that wave graph again, and so when we're looking at Cosmos DB and we're saying provision throughput, what we're saying is we set a maximum IUs of, you know, what you're going to use, and we have a minimum IUs of what you think you're going to use. Now, this is going to be variable. It's going to go up and down, right? But you're going to be able to figure out what we need with our application. So you don't miss out on that over-provisioned throughput that you had previously that I illustrated. And you've also got that scale down factor as well, and scale up that will happen within that hour that you'll get billed for in that hour. So you're never constrained and you can quickly scale down. So you've got guaranteed throughput and availability. So what if I need to scale up further? Well, we can always adjust the max of our auto scales I use. We can also increase our auto scales to increase the number of physical partitions. I won't get into that in today's session, but we can also, you know, when we start scaling up to a particular part, we need to do take into account sometimes spinning of our partitions, but this is handled by Microsoft or Cosmos DB in the background for you. So I mentioned around, you know, auto scale, but we also have this option with serverless with Cosmos DB. We only pay for what you use. So what you, when you're firing up the service and how many IUs you use for that hour, that's how much you pay for. If you then don't do any queries against the database, there is, you will not get charged for that. So this is very good for, you know, dev test type environments, non-sort of critical apps, you know, light traffic, POCs and things like that. When we're looking at the other side of it, where we can say database level shared throughput, this is where we can share throughput between the different containers and different databases within Cosmos DB. So if I look back at the diagram I showed you earlier, we'll have Cosmos DB hooking into your AKS service. So rather than it being a database in a container or in a pod, we're saying that we're going to have that microservice talk out into Cosmos DB. And so this is where you've got your customer microservice product order, you've got your different customer collections, and so that's, and those collections would reside in Cosmos DB. So this is sort of how the architecture would look at the end of the day. You'd have your order service, your customer service, your product service, all talk back to Cosmos DB and the different relative collections or containers. Now, we also have something called Cosmos DB change feed. Now, I wanted to sort of bring this up because I think Cosmos DB change feed is important. When you're doing a microservices architecture, and most people go down an event-driven pathway, change feed gives you an almost a complete ops log of what's been happening to your different service, different events, and keeps a record of those events that you can therefore go and query later and get an update for you. So it's very, very powerful and complements your event-driven architecture. And you can sort of, as I mentioned here, this is sort of the main advantage of the Cosmos DB change feed. You can track your inserts and updates. We don't track on deletes, but we have a way of just doing that with a soft delete at this present point in time. We've got items are ordered in the modification time, and you can also get access to the most recent present. And we guarantee that the order of which the changes happen are there for you. There isn't any duplication. And we also support in terms of multi-region. It's also enabled by default. And you just need to program your SDK to be able to use the change feed or an Azure function. And so, as I mentioned, change feed can be accessed through your SDKs, and that makes it a lot easier to sort of work with. It hides a lot of the complexity. You can also use Azure Functions, so, you know, Azure Serverless, to be able to hook into your change feed and provide like a trigger to be able to act on, you know, a document change or something got updated. The advantage of using functions in this respect is the functions will scale out. So your microservice in the container, that scales. Your Cosmos DB will scale because it's a PaaS service. And then you've got a function that can scale accordingly as well. As I mentioned, so with the functions, you know, we have basically a container that monitors what's happening. It talks to a lease container to work out what's happened and whether the changes are present. And then basically it provides that information back to your function or back to your microservice to what's occurred. So you can see here, if I go back to my diagram, you've got our order service, customer service, product service, and then we've got our different collections or containers in Cosmos, and then we can therefore integrate into Azure Functions as well. The other thing that we have that complements our cloud native development is our hybrid analytical transaction processing. So what happens is our order service provides writes all transactional data to our Cosmos DB. Now you might want to do some analytical processing across that, and typically that would require you to do some sort of ETL process on that transactional data, moving into a data lake or something like that. Now with Cosmos DB, we have something called the hybrid transactional analytical processing, or Synapse Link, which allows us to automatically move that transactional data into a columnar analytical store in Cosmos DB, which no charge for you to happen. This is kept in update within sort of 5 minutes. And then if you're using something like Azure Synapse Analytics, which is Azure's data lake sort of processing and analytical querying lake, you can hook into Synapse Link to hook into that data and then run Spark queries or SQL on demand against that analytical store within Cosmos DB. So you've got no impact on operational workloads. It's low cost. There's no worry about batching. You don't have to worry about maintaining it, managing it, and it's low latency. So you can see here that this is just a really good advantage. And so if we look from our operational data, from our app, for our microservice, talking back to Cosmos DB for that transactional store, the analytical store automatically updates that data for you. And then you can interact with that through Spark, through your Azure Synapse Analytics. And we can write those transactions back as well. We'll write data back from Spark into our transactional store. And you can see it will create that loop for you. Now, I mentioned it just previously around serverless for Cosmos DB. So serverless allows us to only pay for what we provision, only pay for what we use. And so that way, it was very good for your dev test scenarios. It's very good for scenarios where you're not going to consume more than sort of 5,000 RUs, or you're going to not exceed, 20 gigabytes of storage. And when we see serverless, as I mentioned, if you have order scale provisioned, you're going to go up and down, right? And it's going to happen within the hour, but you're always going to sort of pay for that 10% of traffic of what's coming through. Whereas when we're looking at serverless, this unused capacity vanishes. You're only paying for the RUs that you're consuming, which makes it perfect to complement something like AKS. So then what we've got is our serverless sort of thought, where I've got our API, it's talking to a function, or it could be your microservice, your order service, customer service. They talk back to Cosmos DB, and then you sort of got your change feed processing. And if that could be all in a serverless infrastructure, you're only paying for what you use in terms of Cosmos DB. You're paying only for what you use in terms of sort of Kubernetes in this respect, especially with their start-stop capability. And if we talk about your multi-tenant scenarios and expand that out a bit further again, Cosmos DB can handle multi-tenant applications very well. Again, you can have your different tenants and your different microservices. They go back to your different order collections. So we've got you covered in that respect. And as I mentioned about serverless, and I said that with AKS, you're only paying for what you use. With AKS, one of the good features is you can stop AKS. Now, I'm not using AKS at the moment, so therefore I'm going to put it on hold or pause it and then fire it back up when work comes. So Cosmos DB can complement that. So if you think from a dev test scenario, it's a perfect combination that we can use. If we talk about sort of production workloads, then we could say, spot instances. So AKS allows us to be able to use spot instances, which means that I only sort of pay for a VM when it's sort of available at this particular price. So I take advantage of some cost savings, and therefore I can also use, the auto scale in AKS as well as part of the spot instances. So as my more microservices get more demand, I'd be able to scale up and create more and more pods through something like Keter or the horizontal pod or the scaler. And Cosmos DB can also scale in the same fashion for you as that demand grows and happen almost instantaneously for you. And on that note, I just wanted to say thank you very much for letting me present at Cosmos DB Conf. I hope you enjoy the rest of the talks and presentations. And if you do want to reach out to me for further discussion, please reach out to me on my Twitter handle, Benito Griffin. Thank you very much.